This is Digital Story Podcast number 571, February 14th, 2017. Today's theme is The Home Studio, Easier Than You Think. I'm Derek Story. As much as I love outdoor portraiture, some shoots are just better inside. Wardrobe changes are easier, lighting is controllable, and the temperature is far more comfortable. And if you do product photography too, a home studio becomes a necessity. But how much room and equipment do you need to have a functional workspace? Probably less than you realize. And that's what I'm going to discuss on today's show. So it's funny, you know, here's the way this all came about. So I had a shoot last week, and I'm actually going to run a picture from that shoot with this podcast, with the show notes, so you can sort of have the context or the story. But anyway, so I was setting up for this shoot, and I'm working on a new Capture One title for Linda, and so I needed some new content, lined up the shoot. I like to use all of my own photography for the titles and books and articles that I do. So that morning when I was waiting for Leah to come over with the subject, with the model, I was, just sort of tidying up the studio a little bit. And I go, I tell you, I really like the way this little 10 by 11 foot studio looks. And it's a shooting room I spend a lot of time in. I do my product photography in there. I do my portraiture in there. And I do all sorts of, you know, experiments in there when I'm testing lenses and so forth. It is a wonderful place to work. I love it. So I was looking at it and I was going, I should just take a picture because, you know, I talk about doing this and doing that. And folks would probably like to see a picture of, you know, where I'm working, where I'm doing my thing. So I got out the Rokinon 7.5 millimeter fisheye lens. It's the lens that I was using last in Las Vegas. I was in Las Vegas. I decided I was going to shoot everything with a fisheye. You know how that goes sometimes. just get in these moods. So I pulled that lens out and I said, I'm going to do a shoot in here. I'm just going to do a shot and just run a quick story before the model gets here about the studio before a shoot and how it looks. So I did that and I put the shot on Flickr and then I pointed to it from the digital story. And I got some nice comments on Facebook and so forth. It was just kind of a fun thing to do. And then the model got here, Leah got there, and we started shooting. And we had a wonderful shoot, just a really great shoot, just so much good content. So I was really busy that day between the shoot. And then whenever I do a shoot and take, you know, 3 or 4 hours offline to do something, then I have to catch up on everything that happens while I was offline. And then next thing you know, it's time for dinner and all that. So the next day I got back online, was doing my normal publishing and social and all that sort of stuff. And I went over to the Flickr site and noticed that Studio Shot had gone on Explore. So Flickr had picked it up for Explore, which surprised me a little bit because it wasn't the kind of shot that normally goes on Explore, right? I had had one go on Explore a couple weeks earlier, which is more what you expect with the crashing ocean into, you know, this, you know, set of rocks and, you know, gloomy sky and all that. So I wasn't surprised when that one went on Explore, but this studio shot I was. And there were a handful of comments, and then there were comments in email and all that kind of stuff. And I was going, wow, it seems like there's, you know, some genuine interest in this sort of thing. So I was going, you know what, I should do it on the show. I should talk about home studio on the show. And it's very much like a bedroom that you probably have at your place right now. It's 10 feet by 11 feet. So it's a smallish room. It has sliding doors for a closet. And it has one window. And that's what I converted into my photography room. And in there, I do all of my portraiture, and then I do my product photography also, both for the film camera shop, for the website, and then I also do commercial work product photography. Not a whole lot, but for instance, I have one coming up here in another week, where we're going to do, you're gonna love this assignment. This is a real assignment, where we're going to do whiskey, small batch whiskey from a number of companies that are in Northern California, along with artisan cheese and Northern California fruit. And some of that whiskey is going to stay here. I'm just saying, they already told me. I'm not assuming anything. They already told me that it's staying here. So what I wanted to do is tell you a little bit about this room, since it's not different than what a lot of folks have access to in their own place. And this is a townhouse, so you would have the in an apartment or at home. You'd probably even have a bigger room available to you. And, you know, if the kids have moved out, or, you know, if you have a spare room that you can reclaim, you know, maybe right now it's just storing stuff or is kind of a quasi craft room or something like that, this might be of interest to you. So let's start with the physical room itself. It's on the north side of the townhouse. It has a window facing north, and it has this wonderful light that just comes in that window. It's beautiful light. And a lot of times that's all I need to use for certain types of shoots. So I have Venetian blinds on it so I can control the light. And then the room is painted in a white. It's a nice, clean white. It's not Navajo white where it's got a lot of yellow in it. It's a nice, clean white. And it's flat. It's a flat white. This quality of light comes in the north window, and it sort of bounces around in the room very nicely, and it just has a great feel. So that's one of the things that I like. I don't think it's necessary to have good natural lighting in the room, but I tell you, if you can swing it, if you have a choice, if there is an option to have natural lighting in the room, it gives you more options. Now, the other thing that I did, and we're just at this point just talking about the physical room itself, is that it has a standard closet with, you know, the sliding doors. What I did was I replaced the standard sliding doors with sliding doors that have mirrors on them, you know, where it has mirrors that covers the entire door. So essentially, one side of the studio, because this is a big closet, one side of the studio just has mirrors there. So what I do is I have those mirrors to my back so that the subject can see herself or himself while we're shooting. Everyone seems to like being able to see what's going on with those mirrors. And that's something that, you know, doesn't cost a whole lot, but boy, has it really turned out to be a big deal. And then the other thing is, because they are mirrors and they are covering, you know, basically one whole wall, it gives the room a feeling of more depth. Now, unlike a lot of studios, I just left the carpet in. I just have, it's a short carpet, but I just left it in because it's comfortable. You know, when I'm up there working, I don't wear shoes in the studio, so I take off the shoes when I walk in the front door. And so I'm just in my socks. Having carpet in that room is terrific. You know, I really like it a lot. So I leave it in there. It's not your standard studio thing. Normally you will have, you know, hardwood if you're lucky. If you're unlucky, like I have been, sometimes you'll have linoleum, which is not nearly as fun. But I left the carpet in, and I think it's really nice. Now, if the person is standing on the ground and I'm shooting them full length, then what I do is I bring the backdrop down, I curve it, and they're actually standing on the backdrop, so you get that continuous sweep. So it doesn't really make any difference if it's carpet or hardwood for, you know, the things that I'm doing. And that's it. You know, I have a torchlight in the corner just while I'm in there working. And then everything else is, you know, the lighting that I use, you know, when I'm taking pictures. But between the light coming in the big north window and the torchlight in the opposite corner, I have plenty of light when I'm not shooting to go about doing my stuff. So what about the backdrops? What do I use for backdrops? I tried using the wall. I just didn't like the way it looked. And I mean, I knew I was going to have to do something else when I first set up in there, but I thought it'd be kind of cool just to use the wall. But no, I didn't like it. And so originally, when I was first setting up, I built a frame out of PVC pipe. And I used that for quite a while, and it worked great. It's cheap. You can get the corner joints, the whole deal. And I just built a frame, and I used that for a long time. The thing I didn't like about it was that it wasn't really portable if I had to go on location. And the other thing is it didn't look as professional. About a year later, I actually got a backdrop stand. And I got it for like $75, and it has two really nice freestanding poles, you know, with big, big feet, you know, so big solid stand, and they go up high. They'll go up about 9 feet. And then it has a pole, a cross pole, that has holes at each end, and its width is adjustable. And so then you set up, and it's really nice black finish. It looks very professional. And that's what I use now. And then for the backdrops themselves, I either use muslin or roll paper, depending on what I want to do. And it's funny, Leah asked me about this the other day, because she said that she had done a shoot for a photographer on a white backdrop. We were shooting on white the other day, and that the white that he was using, it just like, it was like there was no backdrop. It just went away. And I said, yeah, you know, that's one way to go about it. That's, you know, using roll paper, you can do that, seamless roll paper. For portraits, I usually like to have a little something in the background, a little texture or whatever, even for white. So I tend to use muslin for my portrait shoots, and then I'll use roll paper if I need it for, you know, product shoots or something where the backdrop just needs to go away. And the other thing about roll paper that's nice, you can get all these different colors. So I have black, I have white, I have gray, I have green, I have blue, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they're just rolled up in the corner. You can see them standing up in the corner if you look at that shot that I published. So I'm either using muslin or roll paper. And I don't think you need a whole lot in the world of backdrops. It really depends on what you're shooting. If you're shooting portraits only, then, you know, one or two backdrops is normally all you need. I was shooting against black for like 2 years. I was just, you know, just really loved this black muslin that I had. But I wanted to change things up for this latest Linda thing I'm doing, so I'm going to shoot everything on white. And it's really kind of nice shooting on white, too. And, you know, that's all you need. You don't probably want to get too much into odd colors and stuff because, you know, they tend to be distracting for portraits. The other thing that you might need if you're doing product work, small items like when I do cameras and lenses, is just a little product shooting box. And, you know, those are so easy to get. They're all over the place. And, you know, they're usually a couple feet wide and a couple feet tall, and they're translucent material on, you know, all sides but the shooting side. You just put your object in there, and then you put a couple lights around it, and off you go. And I just keep my product shooting box on a table that has wheels. I think it's a little like computer table, but you can raise it up pretty high. And I just keep it in the corner. So it's always set up and ready to go. And if I need it, I just roll it out into the center of the room, put a couple lights on it, and do my shooting. But if you do product shots, those things come in really handy. So that's all you really need is some sort of backdrop frame or stands, and then a couple backdrops. And if you're in a shared space where you need to put them away, then, you know, they're easy enough to fold up. Just try to keep the backdrops from getting creased. Do you need expensive lights? I don't think so. I started out using speed lights. You know, I just used those for a long time. And then when LED lighting dropped in price, I switched to LEDs, and that's what I use now. And I love LED lighting. And the reason why I like it, well, there's a couple reasons. First of all, you know, now they're very affordable. Second of all, I can control both the intensity and the color of the light. So if you get LED lighting, make sure that you get, you know, what they call bicolor lights that go from warm to cool via a knob. And then that way you can set exactly the lighting temperature that you want for them. And boy, I tell you, that is so nice. So now with these LED lights, I have continuous light source. So it's very easy to meter, very easy to compose. What you see is what you get. I can use any kind of camera, digital, film, whatever. These lights work great. I can color balance them to be exactly what I want. They're cool, so they don't heat up the room. They don't heat up the model in the summer. They're very affordable, and they're pretty darn bright, I have to say. They've really come along. You know, the ones that I use mostly are panels. You know, they have a number of LED bulbs in them. And then I have a couple flapjacks from Photodiox, and I really like the flapjacks too. So the LED lighting is all I need. Now, I usually, at any given time, I'm using 3 to 4 lights if I'm relying on the LED lighting. So I'll have a main light, I have a fill light, I might have a light on the backdrop, and then a lot of times I like having a smaller LED that's attached to the cross pole of the backdrop, shining down as a hair light. And I do like having hair lights for portrait shooting. So I usually have a hair light, a backdrop light. You can do 2 backdrop lights if you want, depending on what, you know, the look is that you're going for. A main light and then a fill light. And if you're short on lights, you can usually use a reflector for the fill light. However, the thing about LEDs, because a reflector isn't quite as effective with them, because the amount of light coming off your main light isn't like with a strobe. So I usually recommend having a second LED light as your fill light, and you can adjust the intensity on that. So you're really looking at, for almost any situation, 4 lights will get you out of Dodge. You can get by with 2 lights. However, you're going to find that you want to add at least a 3rd light pretty fast. Because when you really start working things, you know, you want to be able to shine a light on the backdrop. You want to be able to have a hair light sometimes. And that's where those extra lights come in really handy. In terms of modifiers, again, modifiers are pretty affordable. I use a few different types. I use a softbox. I have a nice softbox that's a fairly large rectangular one. It's about 3 feet by 2.5 feet or 2 feet. And a lot of times I'll use that as a main light. I put an LED in there. And I like softboxes a lot, you know, because you can really kind of control the light. It doesn't spray all over the room. I do use umbrellas also. And I don't use them as much as I used to. I used to use them more when I used strobes. But now with the LEDs, I like softboxes. They're a bit more efficient, and you can control the lighting a bit better. But I do have a couple of umbrellas in case I need them. And then everything else is reflectors. So I have disc reflectors. I have, you know, big reflectors. I have one big piece. It's a really big piece of a foam core board, white foam core board. It's about 6 feet tall and about 4 feet wide. And I can just set it up, you know, on one side of the model or the other. I use it a lot when I'm going existing light. When I have a lot of light coming in that north window, then I'll set up that big foam core panel on the other side, and it makes a really great full-length fill light. And those don't cost very much, and you just lean it up against the wall when you're not using it. So those are cool. So you can use just about anything you want. I, at any time, will have 3 to 4 reflectors out that I want to be able to grab. I'll have a silver one. I'll have a gold-silver mix, and, you know, a white one. You know, just because they have different intensities and different qualities, and sometimes you want a certain look. You want, you know, the fill light to be, you know, softer or warmer or a little bit more edge to it. And since the reflectors don't cost very much, it's really nice having a variety of reflectors there that you can just grab that give you the look that you want. Then in terms of the actual hardware, clamps, stands, all that stuff, the way this works is that you'll start out with the bare essentials. Let's say 2 stands or 3 stands. Clamps for each of the stands, you know, that go on the stand that will hold your light and then also hold the modifier. And so you'll need those. And then scissor clamps, right, to just hold things in place and all that. So you usually start out with the basics and then just add to it over time. And the nice thing about light stands and clamps and all that is that they never really wear out. So I'm using light stands that are like 20, 25 years old. They look brand new. They look great. They work great. And there's really nothing to go wrong with them. Again, the nice thing about this type of hardware is it doesn't wear out. It's just always there and available. And I usually just keep my lights on the stands because I don't have to break down my studio. In fact, one of the things I really like about it is that when I'm done with the shoot, if I don't have time to clean up, I can just close the door. And, you know, that's one of the advantages to having a dedicated shooting room. That's all there is. If you don't have mirrors on the wall, then you definitely want to have a handheld mirror for your model so he or she can, you know, check their hair and check all that sort of stuff. You need a dedicated changing room for them, somewhere where they feel nice and comfortable and secure. You know, I have that bathroom that's just right outside the shooting room there, so they can go in the bathroom, close the door, hang up their clothes, spread out their makeup, and just be really comfortable and, you know, not worry about anything at all. So you need something like that. And then the last thing that I suggest is that you have a little portable speaker. And because music seems to make all the difference in the world during these shoots, and I just have a portable speaker that has just a regular mini stereo jack. And I just ask the subject, I go, hey, you want to put on some of your music that you like? So they just pull it up on their iPhone or their Android phone, whatever they have, put on some music they like. We just run it through that little speaker. It sounds great. And it really makes a big difference in terms of relaxing and, you know, getting into a groove. That's all there is to it. It's really that simple. If this is something that you've been thinking about and you have the opportunity, or the opportunity is within reach, maybe you just have to do a little negotiating or something to get the space, I highly recommend it, because having that space available, when inspiration strikes, you go in there and you can work right away. And even if you don't have time to clean up, it doesn't make any difference. And I just feel like I am far more productive having a dedicated shooting space. I don't think I could go back now. If you have a chance to do it. And I think you'll really go, why didn't I do this earlier? In the news. Well, this is a story I was sad to see. It's about Nikon, and you may have already seen it. The story that I'm reporting from is from Nikon Rumors, and it's what most of the stories on the internet, they were based on this Nikon rumor story, so I just went to the source. Nikon reports extraordinary loss, fundamental company-wide restructuring. In addition to canceling the DL line of premium compact cameras, and that was the line that they had announced last year, like in June of last year, these really wonderful, nimble, highly specified compact cameras. There was three of them. So they've canceled that DL line of premium compacts. Nikon also issued statements describing extraordinary loss, fundamental company-wide restructuring, and a revision of their last financial forecast. So some of the things that are part of this, I'm just going to read you a few of these bullet points here. Nikon Corp reported a net loss to owners of the parent company of 831 million yen, or 2.10 yen per share, for the 9 months ending December 13th, 2016. Now that's compared to a profit of 18.71 billion yen, or 47.08 yen per share the previous year. So that is a big swing. In accordance with the restructuring announced on November 8, 2016, the group recorded extraordinary loss of 29.79 billion yen, mainly incurred from inventory write-downs slash write-off in the semiconductor lithography business, as well as restructuring expenses for the 9 months ending December 31, 2016. So this happens a lot with companies where, you know, things have been kind of building for a while, accumulating, then it's really looking bad, and they just said, you know what, we're just gonna write off this. We're just gonna write this down and just take the hit now and get it over with. And it appears that that's what they're doing with that. The 9 month operating income increased by 67.1%, and ordinary income increased by 42.5% on the year. So money's definitely coming in the door. And the 9 month net sales were 565 billion yen compared to 616 billion yen a year ago. So, I mean, that's not a huge difference in sales and, you know, in income. What it says to me, if I'm reading this right, and I'm not a financial expert, I'm just an everyday entrepreneur. But I have worked for companies that have gone through this sort of thing. And it looks like that some of these other problems have been brewing for a while, and they just got to the point where they just couldn't ignore them any longer and decided to take the hit now. And I say that because if they survive the hit, which I'm hoping they will, I'm sure they will, they survive the hit, then they get that behind them. And, you know, they have other areas of the business that look, you know, fairly healthy and not that much different than they have been in the past. Then they can move forward. They do a little restructuring. They're asking some people to take early retirement, you know, stuff like that. Tighten things up a bit, and then they get going. The reason why I wanted to go into some of the numbers and just bring up the story is that if you just saw the headline as you were browsing, and especially if you're a fan of Nikon and a Nikon shooter, it may seem more worrisome than it may actually be. Obviously, they do have rough times, but it doesn't feel like to me that, you know, Nikon is going to go away or anything like that. I wanted to give you a little bit more detail so that you can see it's probably one of those situations where you just have to write off some bad decisions and then reorganize and then get going again. I'm hoping that's the case. And because whether you shoot Nikon or not, we want them around. They're a fantastic camera company. They're part of our history. And, you know, they force competition, and we need that. Dates set for the Northern California Coast Tour Workshop. This is the third workshop in the series, and it's gone through a number of changes since I first conceived it. So the idea of this workshop is that we'll actually meet in Santa Rosa. We'll meet here at the studio that I've been talking about. And then we're going to head west, which isn't very far to the coast from my studio. And then we're going to head north. And most people usually head west and go south. You know, they go down to Bodega Bay and all that. We're going to go north. And north is wonderful country here. Fort Ross is north. Salt Point is north. All the way up the coast. It's just so gorgeous and rugged and perfect for photographers. That was the idea. Now, originally we thought we were going to do it in the summer, in August. You know, and that was mainly just by pacing and so forth. But now the dates are going to be May 18th through the 20th of this year. So it's going to be a spring trip and not a late summer trip. Now, why would I change that? You know, you people on the reserve list are probably going, why are you changing that? As we started working on the workshop and talking to people, they said, here's a reason why you want to do it in May. Here's another reason. The weather is great. You're going to get the rhododendrons and all that kind of stuff. And then the big reason is that I can get rooms at our home base, which is going to be Ocean Cove, which is, this place is a gem. It's in between Fort Ross and Salt Point. I can get us rooms there and have it serve as our base camp for a fraction of the price that it would cost us in August. So what we did is we took the off-season rates to the very end. That's when we locked in to save you a whole bunch of money, and then off we go. So those of you that are on the reserve list, you will get your invitations to sign up by the end of this week. Because it's coming up in May, we're only going to hold the spots for reserve list folks for 10 days. So if you get that invite and you want to come, you can come in May. Again, May 18th through 20th, then I encourage you to sign up sooner than later. Because after the 10-day period, then I'm going to open it up to the public, because I want to give everyone enough time to get vacation time and all the things that they need to do for a spring trip, for a late spring trip. So it's going to be May 18th through the 20th. Again, maximum 8 people for this workshop. We've got it mapped out really nice. And look for your invitation. I'll have a preliminary itinerary in there. But basically what we're going to be doing is living on the North Coast for 3 days, taking pictures in some of the most beautiful country in the world, hanging out together, and then, you know, using this beautiful place in Ocean Cove as our base camp that is highly affordable. I mean, I'm talking like $115 a night kind of thing. It's a trip. It's a great trip. So anyway, that's coming up. If you're not on the reserve list and you're really interested in this workshop, then get on the reserve list now. just go to the workshops page. It's in first come, first serve. So we start with the people at the top of the reserve list and work our way down. But I think you'll be fine. Get on the reserve list now so you can, you know, get your spot before I open it up to the general public. And you just go to the TDS workshops page. Just go to thedigitalstory.com, look for workshops, click on that, and then use the send me info form, and that'll get you on the reserve list. All righty? Just a couple updates here. Big thanks to our Patreon members for helping us keep the light on and being part of our inner circle. You are the folks that help me pay the bills, and I so appreciate that. And you're also the folks that help keep the ads down on the site. You notice we have far fewer ads these days. That is because of the folks at Patreon helping to support the site. I decided that I was going to take fewer ads and just go with member support. I think it's a better experience, and I think it's a better show. And then finally, a big shout out to Red River Paper. The folks that are behind us and have been behind us, they make fantastic inkjet printing paper. They also have tutorials on their site for doing all sorts of things, including my favorite fine art greeting cards. They have printer reviews for Canon and Epson, and then all sorts of other great printing information. And they have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Red River Paper, they produce the paper, and they sell the paper directly to you. High quality, wide variety, and they keep the cost down. Alrighty, well, that is going to do it for me this week. The home studio, I tell you, if you have a chance to do this, there's an opportunity. And if what I said today excites you, I encourage you to do it. It's such a blast. All right, I'm going to have a little surprise for you next week, so make sure you come back and join me. A terrific guest for next week's show. Tune in. Until then, have a great week. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye now.